So, we have understood the various methods to collect the data, quantitative data. Now, one of the aspect of survey design or primary research design is also sampling plan. So, sampling plan is a very crucial this thing. It provides information such as who can be the respondent, who is supposed to answer, you know, this question, and everyone is not a suitable person to answer. How many such respondents do we need to survey? So the number, where will you find them? What are the selection parameters to decide whether it is a right or wrong? So you draw a profile, you decide a characteristics, so you decide a survey or a filtering question as etc. Where will you find them? The probability of finding them, the sampling approach can be of course used here. There are various sampling approach. We will study this. So this is a sampling plan. Profile is very critical. Researcher must define a profile of a person who can be considered as a sample. So, working manager with at least 5 years of work experience to answer about use of app in the marketing. So, then only you have to determine whether he is a working executive, whether he has a 5 years of experience or not, etc. If no, you cannot continue the survey. Profile is considered as a barometer for selecting the respondents. I have explained you how. If a willing respondent does not meet the criteria, okay, he will not be eligible to answer. You abandon and you go forward and search another sample meeting that idea. Sample size is again a very important aspects. So overall under the sample design, who is your sample unit? That's the profile, the size, the number of respondents out of the total target population that is needed. This is scientifically using statistical tools are generally considered, but in B2B it may not be that. B2B, you can have a geographical this thing or a convenience sampling, etc. It is not possible to meet all the individuals who qualify as a target audience. That's where the survey representative this thing comes, sampling comes. So survey is a representative outcome based on the sample from which the data is collected. This sample is representative of the complete target group profile. So their answers are extrapolated. Their answers are applied to be true for the common or the target group as a whole. So that's what the sampling size that matters. It is there are statistical tools also. The procedure that how do you go about, and it defines how the sample will be selected. In simple word, you have options like a probability or a non-probability based sampling. Okay, under non-probability sampling, either randomly or convenience sampling. So probability sampling is like you go on you know, randomly asking people and gather them. Non-probability, suppose you decide, okay, I will stand up only outside the mall. So you have reduced probability of meeting masses in the other areas. Okay. Now in the non-probability, this thing either it could be random or a convenience sampling. So you may capture people individually, or you may just pull a group, or you may just stand outside a shop where you see most of the people, etc. So you take a convenience call. Overall, you decide that the people coming to mall is the right say target. Then you do this wherein people coming out of the mall you randomly select, or you decide one spot where you try to grab them more number. So that's a procedure. Here there are various approaches given. Simple random sampling. Every member of the population is known to have an equal chance. Stratified random sample. Population is divided into mutually exclusive groups such as income, etc. And randomly the samples are drawn. So stratified on a certain criteria. Cluster, the population is divided into mutually exclusive group, say pin code. So there's a cluster that has been found. And then from that cluster you draw the data. Non-probability sampling. So these three are sample. Random, stratified random, and cluster is a probability sample. Non-probability samples are convenience sample. The researcher selects the most accessible population, easily available to him, meeting the criteria. Meeting the criteria, of course. Judgment sample. The researcher uses this to his judgment to select the population number who are good source of accurate this thing. So he uses the judgment. So for judgment for nature of a profile as well as whom to contact where, and then the quota sample. Here the quota is fixed up. The researcher interviews a prescribed number of people in each of the several categories. So cement, suppose cement is as a product on which you are doing it, you may do a quota sample, architect, interior decorator, actual users, etc. And then you decide, okay, actual users 100, architect 20, you know, interior decorator 10 numbers, etc. So that's how you've built a quota. So these are the approach or the procedures for selecting the sample unit you have described earlier. Okay. Now continuing this, the data collection instrument, after the sampling has been understood, it's a part of our understanding that the development of a quantitative research needs a instrument. We need to cover data collection, therefore instruments are there. For a quantitative research, the primary data collection instrument is a questionnaire. Okay, so if it's a quantitative research, there are two options to this. One is a questionnaire and second is inventories. So this is what we will try to get into, and it's a form of a series of questions. So what is questionnaire? It's a series of questions which is listed in a specific order, chronological order. There the order is very important. It is designed to pull out all the desired information from the respondent in a very logical manner. The setting of the questionnaire, the same, each question has a logical implications. Of course, however, when you design it, your language, your length, etc., the simplicity is the most important aspect. Ambiguity should be avoided. Flowery language should be avoided. Language should be very simple. Relevant questions. You cannot answer everything. You know, you cannot ask everything. So only relevant to the primary objective or a secondary objective can be asked. Not that while you are gone there, you also ask them whether you are doing a survey on air conditioner. Unless the data collection do not require, you cannot ask, do you own microwave? Do you own a car? No, you cannot ask such kind of a question, irrelated. Yeah. So that's what one need to be taken care of. The format of the questionnaire needs to be tested. So questionnaire when developed, you need to test that. So means you do a sample testing, you go to sample population, ask them, you find it difficulty or you find it answer ambiguity, etc. Then you attend that area and improvise your question. Okay. There are different formats of the questionnaire that one can lay down. Close-ended questions, where question is very specific and specific answer only is expected. So that's a close-ended question. Have you tried men's face scrub in the past? Very close-ended, yes or no. There cannot be a third like maybe or may have. No. You have either tried or you have not tried. Close-ended questions. Okay. Open-ended questions will allow, what do you think your views on the men's this thing, you know. Men's concern about the beard, this thing, or so that. So then anything can be told by the respondent. You allow respondent in the open-ended, you are allowing him a freedom to give his share of mind. While in the close-ended, it is easy to tabulate, analyze, statistical techniques can be applied, which is not the case with the open-ended question. It is a very open, you try to derive based on the judgment and the understanding you get. Okay. Open-ended question, of course, but gives you the mind behind. So when he answered certain thing, which is in a close-ended, you, if you do not ask a reason behind, you are not studying his mind. So open-ended question allows you to get reasoning, what is behind. So that, however, they are difficult to, really quantified or analyze. However, quanti and quali, and open and close-ended with open-ended really gives a better perspective. That one need to remember. Then the other tool, as we said, is an inventories. It's a series of statements which is asked in a respondent to indicate their degree of agreement or a disagreement. Here it is not a questions kind of thing, but it's a statement. Now the statement, the respondent has to confirm whether he is in agreement with or is a disagreement with. Respondent will be presented with a list of product attributes, related specific statements to which they are asked to indicate their relative feelings. Okay, so degree of impact or expectation or an experience, okay, or a satisfaction, as you see, etc. So it's a statement. I love this product because of features. And then the customer will be asked, I fully agree, I partially agree, I neither agree nor disagree, I don't agree, I not at all agree. So that way respondents are given a statement and the options thereof. This is again a very powerful quantitative approach because it can be analyzed using a statistical tool. Most frequently used for evaluating data, like there are techniques called Likert scale, semantic differences scale, rank order scales. We have studied the semantic differential scales earlier, wherein you give a statement and 5 to 7 point based answer can be given. Again, they are all extremes as such. So we understand the Likert scale now. What is Likert scale? If I have to explain you, number understanding: agree strongly, agree neither, nor disagree, disagree. We use a statement. It is fun to shop at the Phoenix Mall. It is fun to shop at the Phoenix Mall, which is in Mumbai. B, C, D, E, F, etc. Products are Phoenix often cost more than they are worth. It is a good place to meet friends and neighbors, etc. Most branded products are available at the store. Now, for all these questions, this may be one of this may be the answer. I agree strongly or disagree. Most branded products are available at the Phoenix Mall. You may say, I strongly agree. Okay. It's a good place to meet friends and neighbors. You may say, I strongly disagree because jagah hi nahi hoti, itna crowd hota hai. So that's how, so that's a Likert scale. So you take a answer bandwidth, you link it to the given statement. Okay. Remember, this is under inventory. So there is a statement, there is no question. This can also have a broad grouping. So fun at, which is divided, this thing, you have a various statements under that. Product. So these are like, this is 5 is as an example, maybe 10, 15, 20 questions are presented. So that's a Likert scale. Semantic differences understood earlier also, but represented here. Generally, it's a 7 point, this thing, very good, and it goes to very bad, moderate, slightly, neither nor. So courteous salesman, salesperson. So at Phoenix, Infinity, Armall, and then you ask people, so they will give you this. Okay. So helpful people, comfortable walkways, etc. So this will help you to plot a snake diagram, so to say. Okay. And that will enable you to know where you stand better vis-a-vis competition, where competition is better vis-a-vis you. So that's a semantic differential scale. Rank order scale, instructions, rank the following. Here you have to give the ranking. So rank the following smart TV brands in order of your preference to own the same. If you are given an option to own, rank them. Yeah, so which one you will take first, which is second, which is third. So here the ranks are written. I may say Sony number 1, National number 2, LG number 3. So that way the ranks are obtained. And there is a statistical technique behind, which will eventually at the end tell you which is emerging brand as a number 1, which is emerging brand number 2, which is emerging brand number 3. So that is a big quantitative findings for the marketeer. Okay. So we understood the various data collection, this thing. Now consumer research process, the other steps are the collection of a primary data, analyze, and the prepare. You may find why it is out here like this. It's a kind of a simple step. After the questionnaire is done, the sample is known, etc. Whether mail data, internet data, etc. You go there, you wait for the data to come in. When they come in, you apply the statistical techniques to the quantifiable data. Qualitative is analyzed based on judgment and understanding. And the inference is drawn. Inferences are drawn, which is analysis of the data. From that analysis and the inferences, then you come out with what you call a conclusions. And from conclusions, you bring out what you call a recommendations. So these aspects are presented in a form of a report to the client. So that's what completes the 7-step cycle. We have to understand the qualitative research design. So in the this is not say like explain in detail because we have completed one part, quantitative. Now we will understand the qualitative. However, this will remain at this level. It is essentially not that in this area detailing has to be done. So now we understand qualitative research design. There were 3 we earlier discussed. In-depth interview, the focus group discussion or a focus group interviews, and the projective techniques. Let's study them one by one. So we are understanding different methodology. Under qualitative, the in-depth interview is another aspect we studied earlier. There are three types: in-depth interview, focus group interviews, and the projective techniques. In-depth is a non-structured conversation between the interviewer and the respondent. Subjects like sex education should be made compulsory. Your views. So then you ask her, there cannot be a formal questionnaire. So respondent is supposed to discuss with you, and interviewer is supposed to kind of probe, understand, redirect conversation, etc. Okay. Freedom is given to articulate the thought. There is no restrictions. He cannot be reprimanded, etc. Okay. So therefore, there is openness. The person feels empowered to talk. Now, for various reasons, there can be some, limits are placed. However, broadly, it is an open discussion designed to uncover predispositions. What is there in the mind? It should uncover the unconscious feeling, the views, etc., the need, hidden fear, etc., as the case may be, the likes, dislikes, etc., are offered a complete, permissive atmosphere. In the sense, atmosphere which is created should be very, very transparent, very, very open, receptive in nature. That's the time when the respondent will open out. Okay, you don't advise, you do not criticize, etc. So that's the interviewer is not supposed to do all those things. So under the in-depth interview, it can be one-to-one or one-to-many. So one-to-one is just an in-depth interview. If it is one-to-many, it is a focus group interview. We will study this. However, there are nature of this in-depth interviews. So first is a true in-depth or a clinical, psychologist, doctors, etc. They have this specific approach to discussion. They are very clinical, and they will have a narrative points on which they want to understand a person, and they will definitely involve those areas of discussion. While non-directive, this thing can be let loose, the core subject or this thing is there, and then the respondent is allowed to speak as it comes to in mind. Interviewer is supposed to direct, first understand, create a clarity of the understanding, ask him more questions, etc. So here it is a non-directive, free-flowing kind of a conversation. However, overall it is done with certain objective in mind. So certain limits are exercised where the interviewer has to be smart, without empowering, without forcing, or without making the respondent abort the discussion. He has to keep this guy tuned to the key area. Semi-structured or a focus interview, here certain specific list of points are discussed, so therefore here the tighter control is needed by the interviewer. He should allow, of course, the freedom, but simultaneously he should see that the discussion do not sway away in a different direction. It should remain, therefore he has to moderate this. Okay, so moderation is very critical, this thing, while in a semi-structured or a focused interview. Individual in the interview requires a great skill. So the guy who's taking this has to have a great skill, needs a patience and a considerable time. Difficult to establish a right degree of confidence. However you try, the respondent may remain in a state of suspect as to why are they, discussing on this subject, etc. And therefore, their answers may at times be not openly coming out. The qualitative information provided is a very subjective in nature. The guy has given his share of mind. You do not know the state of mind that he is into it and why he is seeing the so, etc. That aspect is not known. Only assumption is that because you have allowed a freedom to talk, you say you believe that the guy will be truly expressive. Technique is definitely costly, requires a lot of time, a large sample cannot be covered in a very limited time, etc. Number of individuals. So now you move from in-depth to focus group interview, or I will say the focus group discussion. And of the interview is when only the specific questions are discussed, kind of thing. Though it's an in-depth interview, but it is discussed on a kind of a question, this thing as such. But when you involve a group of people into a discussion, then it becomes a focus group discussion. This text essentially relates with the FGD, focus group discussion. You call numbers like may vary, 6 to 12 people from the same target segment profile are invited at one time at one place. Okay, the group will get basic introduction. There is a person called moderator. Moderator will trigger the discussion, and he will not only trigger the discussion, he may at times forcibly, trigger controversial subject, or he has to overall ensure that the discussion remain aligned, cannot again go very stray, and cannot go really wide and far away from the subject of interest. So that's a moderation role. Moderator has to focus on three things. He must establish a rapport with the group so that his own interaction is smooth, and he sets the objective very well of the group discussion. Provoke intense discussion. He used to at the right time provoke a discussion. He should ensure that everyone participates, everyone shares their view, etc. And at every critical point, he should get into summarizing what is emerging as a group's collective and consensus based outcome. Even at that time, if somebody has an objection, he or she can participate to make the amend. So again, that may trigger a discussion. So through a discussion, through a intense arguments, etc., freedom for everyone to talk, etc., you try to read the mind. You try to compel group to arrive at some common consensus among them. That itself is a strong indicator of whether people are tuned towards your expected objective or a product or a service, or they are not tuned towards it, etc. Okay. So, advantage of focus group discussion is respondents are able to expand, given a freedom. So, they not only they expand, they are free to discuss, they refine based on the discussion happening around. If he or she feels that his opinion needs to be changed, then he can refine that in interaction. That it's a very detailed, accurate, thoughtfully evolved conversation. So, therefore, there is a meaning to it. Okay. Collective opinion occurs when a comment, perhaps random, maybe by one member, triggers the similar feeling in all other member. So, overall, the moderator role is to try and see that whether this group can arrive at a collective opinion or a collective consensus. Now, this way, various discussion that happens will allow the other guy to shape his opinion at that point of time or rechange his opinion at that point of time. Okay. So, group FGD, as they say, is more exciting and offers a more simulation. It's stimulating environment in which everyone is participating with the freedom to express and change the opinion based on the discussion quality that is happening. So, that's why it's a very, very innovative and very, very meaningful exercise. As we have, if I have to classify FGD, I call it a very meaningful exercise. But yes, time required, money required is very high. Advantages are the heightened interest and the excitement makes more meaningful comments. People are involved and therefore the meaningful discussion takes place. The security being in a crowd encourages some member to speak out openly. You are not fearing about what others will feel, etc., because there is a moderator, there is other member who some supporting, some not supporting you, etc. But however, overall, there is an environment of freedom to speak prevails out there. Question raised by the moderator is to the group, whole group can participate on that question, or it can compel them to think, okay, and then compel them to think. They may change their opinion. The spontaneity can be there, and if the moment it throws a question, people can start based on if they have a strong opinion about it, either for or against. Okay. So, overall, at any given point of time, even moderator doesn't compel to make up the opinion. Idea is to see whether the group can arrive at a consensus-based opinion or not. So, that's what the moderator drives. That's what is the advantage of a focus group discussion. Some disadvantages, of course, both non-participative and non-responsive. Respondent may create a source of error. You have called people based on the profile. You do not know their mindset when it comes to the group dynamics. So, what may happen, some people will remain passive. They will never respond. Okay, they will not participate, etc. So, now that may create a kind of an error. Then only the discussion remains limited within few. Okay. FGDs are an expensive activity. You need a pre-qualifier round. Then you have to have a venue fixed up. You have to have other logistics arrangement. You have to pull these people to that place, etc. So it's a expensive activity. So friends, we were at the point where we are still trying to understand the disadvantage of FGD without an effective moderator. The moderator has to be strong. He should know that with people are swaying away or people are to the point, how to trigger a conversation, how to make people see through things, etc. So that he is a powerful line. He is not supposed to influence, but he is supposed to help people to see through things. Participants may react negatively towards the dominant member. So what also may happen is then maybe somebody who tries to hijack the whole discussion, which may put other participants at a negative end, or they may become dormant, or they may create an aggressive outlook to this person. So that may just spoil the whole dynamics of the group discussion. It will become a more revenge oriented conversation. So that's not the objective for which the FGD is generally done. Thank you.